And now the floor is open to you. Just a little couple of guidelines, and I know nobody follows guidelines, but Matt Perrier has got a microphone that's hooked up so we can hear better. And also, remember, we're webcasting this whole thing. And so we'd like you to, if you would, wait until Matt gets there. But if you don't, that's fine. We'll try to repeat the questions. But if we could at least have you raise your hand, and that way we can get around and do that, that'd sure help. The floor is open. Anytime you want to start challenging this this group up here and learning more about what they're doing, and if you don't, believe me, I got some corny questions for them. So anybody out there want to start off? You got a lot of talent.
I got one for Gene Harris. We've been told that you can't ignore hybrid vigor, and you got to use it in a commercial operation, and understand you're running all purebred Angus commercial cows. What's your reason behind that?
In our operation, Steve, it's called a scale. Makes it make a believer out of you. We've tried those other breeds and all of the heterosis and university trials that tell you to do those things. But one of the things that really brought us to trade Angus quicker than we would have probably otherwise was we're in an area that's a little bit trace mineral deficient. And if you try some of them other breeds in an area that's trace mineral deficient, you're going to have a myriad of problems from overeating in your calves and scours and death loss that you can't really identify. So I think it was 1985 we just started with Angus, strictly Angus bulls, and we bred up from a Hereford base. But we performance tested when we've kind of changed our deal and now calve a little later. And so when we had additional labor and calved early, we performance tested and weighed every calf, and it was amazing when you had some of them crossbred calves that looked like they were going to outweigh the blacks, that you couldn't do it on a scale. And so that really what changed us. And plus, it's easier to manage your own resources if you have one breed rather than trying to do multiple pastures. And this replacement heifer deal is quite an advantage there also.
Well, we have a question in the back, so we're going to take that. Fire away.
Kevin, working on the East Coast, a lot of your producers, I've heard them say, well, you know, I'll give you a second in the sale barn. I know you and your family have worked really hard with various programs to incentivize them for better genetics and better herd health. Could you comment on that, please?
Sure, Mark. I didn't mention in my introduction, but we've worked real hard to try to help our producers who are most small producers, maybe average herd of 30 cows. Many of those guys were buying the good genetics, buying the good bulls, doing the herd health programs, doing most everything right, but then when it comes time to market those calves, being small producers, selling them at the local livestock auction, they got no reward. And we saw that as a problem, so we have tried to help group those producers and group them with light cattle, light load lights, and help them be able to sell in load lights, and also give them the opportunity to retain ownership as we do with our own commercial calves. And we feed our cattle mainly at Elton Garden City, Kansas. Mark's friend, who recommended him highly to us, Pam Hands at Triangle Lakes, and we've been doing this now for 5 years. And what we do is allow our customers, you know, they have 10 steers or 5 steers or 20 steers, that's not a truckload, but if we can put a group of those together, we can send those together as a group, and we partner usually with Sam at the feed yard to get helps with cash flow, and we get all the good carcass information back, and all those cattle are killed on a grid at U.S. Premium Beef. And then we have the job of not only do we handle the financial end of it, divvying up all the money to the different producers, but, you know, you get all this carcass information and feedlot performance information, which is so important to us. And we have the job of disseminating that information and putting it in a form, hopefully, that our customers and us can understand, and getting that back to the customer, the bull customer. And then if he needs our help, a lot of them help us, but if he needs our help, we try to help see where the weaknesses are, the strengths are, and how we might improve upon those. It's been a real fun project, and it's a lot funner as it is right now when we're selling $92 fat cattle, which we don't have any. We wish we had some there, but it's going to be fun.
Other question. Clear in the back over here, Matt.
Mr. Eden, we too have seen the advantage of early weaning, and I guess I have a two-part question for you. How early do you think you can wean, and how would you figure your 205-day weights if you do that?
Well, we weaned April calves in early August last year, and at Ohio State they've done a lot of them at 3 months of age, 120 days, and gotten along really, really well. The Angus Association has just come out with a new deal for the adjusting those calves 120 days. So I guess they can do that now. When we did it last year, we reweighed them when we brought them in the second time. But the Angus Association does have a new program that I think just passed.
That's correct, thanks.
Questions. Vance, follow up on that. How did you get along health-wise
with
those, and what differences did you see in those in comparison to those that you didn't early wean?
Well, last year, because we weaned everything early, but we took an age group from early February till late April, so, I mean, almost actually first of May, and really saw very little sickness. I think, actually, it's my understanding, and maybe that, you know, there's enough antibodies working yet from that cow deal. Actually, you're going to have more, less sickness at that time than you will when you wean them at 7, 8, 9 months of age. So we got along really good. But I should try this year. I did some weaning in pasture. We're sure going to explore that a lot more. I had a lot of doubting Thomases around home, but it worked really well.
Okay. Other questions? Let's not be bashful. The question is, I'll repeat it, how do you wean them in the pasture? And I hope somebody's going to ask that, because I was going to if you didn't. All right, Vance.
Well, there were a couple of pastures we didn't try yet. Let's put it that way. But where we kind of have a – we try to rotate our pastures, and so we had just a couple of pastures like in a box type, and we got a box in the middle, so – we had a V across from one side to a V across the other side with a box, and we put electric wire, an eighth of a mile both ways, and we put a tank up there, up to the top end where the calves would be, and we also put a pre-feeder in there, or we put a pre-feeder in there a week before we weaned those heifer calves, and we brought them over there, and those heifer calves kind of were going to ball, and they come up right to the top end. The cows had to walk about a half mile the other way for water. So in about 3 days, those calves were starting to go all over the place, and we did. I'd like to wean them, pick them up a week, but with all the conflicts we had, we picked them up a week and a half. And we picked them up and got along just super. The only thing I will do not put them in a big pasture with a bunch of trees, because that's a son of a gun to get them out of it. So that's one thing I've learned not to do.
I know we've done that at a research farm in southern Iowa, Vance. It's been a great practice. We've basically reduced our health problems down to zero by doing that, just grazing those calves on grass. Basically, we pull the cows into the dry lot and give them a very low maintenance diet, kind of shut down that milk production. It's worked very, very well.
We didn't do that, but I guess one reason we did it, we'd have these cows all weaned and laying around, and you'd walk through them and they'd never get up. And we were down in that river valley where we've had, I don't know, coons or bobcats or I don't know what. It's gone through those things and just flattened corrals. These, we brought them in, worked them, took them out in a 20-acre lot, and we haven't had any problems. And no health problems.
Other questions? Other questions? Before I give you the corny one, yes, sir. Shout it and I'll repeat it.
I was curious, Gene, when you've gone to more grazing year round in a tougher climate, how hard was it to get your cows to adapt to less
feed? Gene, you want to repeat it or you want me to?
The question is, and Pete knows a little bit about our operation, but we graze the mature cows about 10.5 months a year. And the part of North Dakota that a lot of the tour goes through is a little different than what we live in. We're on the Little Missouri River, and it's a lot rougher and a lot more brush and trees. But in the early 90s, we had the opportunity to carcass prove the bull 6807. And I put a lot of females in our herd that fit our environment really, really well. And so we just started backing off. We also, about that time, we got on worst terms with our banker and best friends with our feed salesman. And so we had to kind of rectify that to some degree. And we were calving a little too early for our resource. We were calving in February and March, and that wasn't working profitability-wise. So we put a goal. We wanted to raise 525-pound steer calves. And when we set that goal, our steers weighed 614. And so we're going the other direction. We start calving in April, and we've got quite a few calves weaned already and do a program similar to Vance's. One of the things that really helping that weaning across the fence is a good border collie dog to get those calves gathered back up. They can gather calves a lot better than man and a horse. But we just culled on those cows that wouldn't fit. You know, we're pretty particular about buying bulls that got a real good loin across the top and some guts in them to make sure that we produce a cow like that. And if you run that heifer calf kind of in the same environment that you're going to run that cow in, you're going to have some fallout there as those heifers mature that won't work in your deal, but you can go to grass with them or spay them or do something else, put them in a different, just send them to a different market. And so that's how we kind of get around it.
Questions? All right, we're sitting here. Kevin, you know, I heard you say that you're working pretty closely with your customers to help them group calves together, get them into some retained ownership or into a sale situation. What did you give up so you could do that service? Or you just work longer and harder?
I tell you, we laugh. It always seems like we've got to run faster and jump higher to be in this business, and it not necessarily we get any more for our bulls. But it does take quite a bit of time, and I'm not sure that unless you handle a bunch of carcass data, you really realize just how much time it does take to get that stuff disseminated and out in a readable form. But we feel strongly enough about it to help our producers, and many of our producers don't retain ownership on their calves. They just aren't quite ready for it. But we try to help them in just the same in getting their calves marketing. The Angus Journal and the commercial relations staff does an excellent job in just the August issue of printing a list of feedlots that are interested in Angus-influenced cattle. So before I came here Tuesday, we faxed about 12 of those feedlots, a group of calves of some customers we had in West Virginia, and hopefully they'll get together on it. But we feel strongly about it. And, you know, we always seems like us bull merchandisers are coming and trying to come up with more programs or more services. But, you know, I still think we have to keep in mind that every service that we provide does come at a cost. And if the producer isn't willing to pay any more for his bull, that cost is coming out of the seed stock operation. So, you know, I think if we're going to be economical, we're going to have to evaluate what services are truly important and what services will pay their way. And we just can't, you know, if you're in operation like ours, where we have certain agreements that we've got to meet with our banker, you know, we just can't give a farm away to sell bulls. But we feel strongly about providing service and providing a quality product. But it won't always be at the lowest price. It's tough to get all three things. It's tough to get a quality product, service, and at the cheapest price. And I don't think you have to offer all three. I think you can offer two of the three. So we try to offer quality service and at a reasonable price.
Okay. Question back here.
This question is for Kevin or anyone else on the panel. With regard to your most recent statement, having service be a large component of your ability to sell bulls, what do you see down the road in the future of the purebred livestock industry with regard to maybe differentiating what you get for your bulls and what you get for your service? In other words, comparing marketing bulls to marketing automobiles. Obviously, automobile dealerships make a lot of money selling the car initially, but they also have a profit center around their service enterprise. And splitting your business up into two essentially enterprises, one a marketing enterprise for the seed stock and then a service enterprise, and having both of those enterprises be a profit center for your business.
I'll take a stab at it first, and then maybe some of my fellow panelists might answer the question. That's a tough one. We haven't been able to differentiate between those services and the actual sale. And I guess the kind of way we've looked at it is when they buy the product from us, the service goes along with it, and it's included in the at the time of purchase. And you know, lots of times folks say, well, I can't afford bulls there. They sell too much. And not that ours are, not that we have real high sales compared to this part of the country, but in the East it's been tougher to sell bulls, and we've always kind of taken less for them. But, you know, that's a tough one. And the way we've looked at it, it was just part of the product, part of the bull when we sell them, is that we're going to provide our services. And over, hopefully over a period of time, our customers have learned to appreciate that and be willing to pay for that, knowing that, when they come and buy, we're kind of coming along too and offering our services.
Hang on, let's let Vance, and then we'll answer that. Okay, let's let Vance take a stab. I'm not going to let him off that free.
Well, you know, when I put God in this business, this is a lot easier business. You know, this is kind of a, you know, few raise few bulls and maybe fertility testing, and they pick them up, and it was pretty well over. But today, there's a lot of competition, and because of we have been very successful as a breed, there's a lot more people in the Angus business, and I don't think you, I don't think this is a part-time business anymore. I think you're in the Angus business. You better be in the Angus business and try to do as many things as possible. I know we do not have unlimited resources, and some people that are in the business have unlimited resources. They probably don't have to make a living in the Angus business, and they can offer all kinds of service and hire all awfully, 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 awfully good people. You know, so we have to do as well as we can and treat people as well as we can, and